Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Tuesday Night Jaw Meets with a repeat customer this time around. Customer's not the right word. Guest is the right word. I'm recording this in my car on my driveway at 2:30 on Friday morning after just getting back from the Fighting Spirit Wrestling School in Magull in Liverpool, where I've been chatting to Zach Gibson for the second time because we wanted to do Zach Gibson's Adventures in China Part 2. I'm recording this in my car because I don't want to go into my house because it's very late. I've just got home. I don't want to go into my house and wake up my wife and my son. But also, I want to put this podcast out tonight so I can go in a minute, edit everything together and put it out, and you guys can enjoy it. And believe me, it's a treat. It's genuinely great because Mr. Gibson's stories about his travels are wonderful. And there's bits in this that I'm still cracking up about now. So enjoy that. Quick plugs. Obviously, listen to everything on the Distraction Pieces Network. I'm super proud to be on it. My wrestling company is Progress Wrestling. ProgressWrestling.com, demand-progress.com to see all of our shows, including many that feature Zach Gibson, including our first ever show. And you can certainly see the difference from him then to our last show that we did, which was Chapter 55, Alexandra Palace. My website is jimsmorman.com. Point people at jimsmorman.com/TNJ. Follow me on Twitter at jimsmorman. A little plug for something cool that I'm doing. I am doing a show about the history of professional wrestling. It's called I'm Sorry I Love You, A History of Professional Wrestling. I can't remember the link to the tickets. But it's a work in progress thing that I'm doing for various reasons, some of which you might be able to read between the lines and figure out. So I'm going to pin the tweet to the top of my Twitter feed now so you can see it. So if you want to come to it, it's in Leicester on, I want to say February the 18th, but I could have got that date wrong. It's in Leicester in February. It's on a Sunday afternoon between progress shows, and it's like a fiver. And it starts at 5. It's only an hour. It'll be finished by about 6-ish. So if you want to come to it, there's loads of time for you to get home. Leicester's in the middle of everything. It's in the middle of the Leicester Comedy Festival. Come to it. It's a work in progress, but it's for various reasons. It'd be great if I could fill it. It'd be even better if I could actually, like, pretty much fill it before the Leicester Comedy Festival tickets actually go on sale. So I'll pin that tweet now, at Jim Smallman on Twitter. Go to that. And obviously, we plug this at the end. Listen all the way to the end for the plugs for the Fighting Spirit School in Liverpool. Zach Gibson and James Drake are doing a great job. Brilliant trainees down there, being taught things the right way. It's a fantastic facility. If you're thinking about getting into wrestling and you live up in the Northwest, you live up Liverpool way, then go along there. It's genuinely really good. I'm really impressed by it. Those guys are my friends, but seriously, it's a great place to go and train. And we talk a bit about him being a coach, but we talk quite a lot about about the utter ridiculousness of his tours to China. So anyway, enjoy. Sorry it's a bit late this week. Got a cool guest for next week as well. Probably won't put next week's up until Wednesday, so this one's got a bit of time to percolate. And enjoy, and if you're coming to Progress on Sunday, as always, you know how it works. Give me a high five. Anyway, enjoy me chatting to Zach Gibson. I'll catch you on the other side. Right, Mr. Gibson. It's a bit echoey, probably. Probably not as echoey as my kitchen's been on recent episodes. Where are we?
In life, or...?
No. I mean, at the minute. Physically, what building are we sat in at the moment?
We are at the Fighting Spirit Pro Wrestling Gym in Magull, Liverpool. It is 11:15.
Because we've been chalking for too long.
We've already done two off-the-record podcasts.
Yeah, they're brilliant as well. They're badass.
All the stories that were too hot. Too hot for Tuesday Night Jaw. And we've just finished a good session, I think.
Yeah, so this is your school, isn't it?
It is. Mine and James Drake. It's not just a gimmick. We are actually mates.
And I mean, I only live down the road, so I've been saying this is something that I want to try and do more. It's in my interest for British wrestling to get better. And knowing that guys like you and JD are doing training and I know you had, I think, four of your lads did ring crew for us in Manchester, last Manchester show. And there were such nice lads, so attentive, so wanted my feedback on stuff. And I said to them, like I do most trainees, if you can DM me on Twitter anytime you want. It might take me a week to get back to you, but I'll always get back to you. And because I want everyone to get better. And I think at the minute, this place is amazing for us, because it's normally like a martial arts place, isn't it?
Yeah, so, well, basically, if you actually have a quick look, you'll notice it is a swimming pool.
Oh, yeah, it is, isn't it?
So this is actually, obviously, this is just around the corner from my house. This is my old gym. This is where I used to train.
Oh, right.
So I've always known this has been here, but I didn't know what it got turned into. So, like, this used to be a gym. There used to be just weights through in there, which is now like a jungle gym for the kids. Upstairs there was like matted areas for people to do yoga and stuff like that. I'm pretty sure they just still do yoga. And then the pool got emptied out, as you can see. The guy that owns it, Brendan, stuck these rails around the side, filled it with mats. When we found it, I remember saying to JD, like, we need to try this place, we need to ask him. And he was like, oh, he'll never have us, because that's how good it looks in here.
Yeah,
it looks too good for us to rock up and go, oh, can we do wrestling here, please?
I remember you tweeting photos, because I get asked a lot by people, I live in this place, where should I train? And I have standard responses, and if you're anywhere near Liverpool, you need to train with you guys. And this is a new, just because JD's worked for us less time, but he's still someone that I trust. You've worked for us since our first show. So, like, I know that I know you've been trained the right way, so I know that you're going to teach people the right way.
Saying that, one of the reasons why this place is so good is because I have been trained the right way,
yeah,
and I've also been trained the wrong way. I've been trained a lot of times the long way. I've wasted time, I've wasted years, and it pains me physically and mentally. So mentally, when I look back and I see some guys who've been doing it for a year and they're already so much better than I was after 3 or 4 years, that annoys me. And then when I try to get up in the morning and something goes in my back, that annoys me a little bit more.
Yeah.
And I think back to the bad training, and like, obviously, don't get me wrong, like, I'm not going to stand here and say that I do this because I want to help everyone be wrestlers. That's one of the reasons why I enjoy doing this. I do this to make more money. And I will say that honestly. But whilst we're here, like, I will never let anyone leave until I tell them the right way to do it.
Yeah.
We start at 6:30 and we end at 9:30. Today we finished about 10:15. That's early for when we normally finish. Me and JD are normally here way longer, because if I see something that I want to show them, I'll just keep them there and we'll do it again.
Well, I saw that at the end, because I came up to do, and I've done this at, I used to do this at what was the Projo, what's now Knuckle Locks in London, and I've done it at Fight Club Pro School in Wolverhampton. And I'll come and do just little promo things. And because I live near here, I've said I want to try and come back in like a month's time and maybe do something else. Because again, I can't tell people how to wrestle. I can tell people what I like. But I can help people with promos, because I've taught people how to do comedy for the last 10 years. I can do it. And it's amazing seeing the enthusiasm for everyone who's here. Because it's a Thursday night. There was a lot of people here. And also, as soon as we finished doing we split the class into two, didn't we? And the people were doing stuff in the ring, and I was doing promo stuff. And as soon as that was finished, it wasn't like people were like, well, it's finished, let's get going. It's not like the last lesson at school when everyone's like, oh, I can't wait to get home. What was interesting was how people still wanted to talk to you and JD and still wanted your opinion on stuff. Whether or not they're at a point where they're actually wrestling yet, they still want to be able to develop their character and get better. And that's, again, they can obviously feel the enthusiasm that you guys have for this school, because they want to broach subjects with you all the time?
No, I'm very confident in like the actual in-ring training that we provide. Mm. I'm very confident in the nutrition advice that JD gives, not me. And the nutrition advice that we give, and in the cardio and conditioning advice that we give. But on top of that, even if you can try to argue that someone can do it better, which again I would argue because I'm very confident in our own abilities, but if nothing else, no school anywhere in the world has more fun than we have. I can't. Obviously, we still do Hindu squats. We still do Hindu push-ups. But you find me another school that has entered the six-a-side footy league every Monday. Or you find me another school that plays Quidditch as a warm-up.
Well, when I walked in, because I arrived about an hour after training had started, and I, because there's a lot of traffic lights between central Liverpool and here, I learned. But when I arrived, like, I walked in, and outside of when I'm on shows and stuff, I'm quite unassuming. I kind of just sort of sneak in and hide. And it just felt like everyone felt like they're having a good time. And yeah, when you're training to be a wrestler, you're here to work. But at the same time, you know, it's got to be some fun, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think some people forget that wrestling is fun anyway. Mm. I mean, we're trying to entertain fans, so they can only feed off what we're feeding off. Yeah. If we're only giving them a 3 out of 10 of energy, they'll sit there at a 3 out of 10.
Yeah.
We have to bring them up energy-wise. We want them to have fun. If we're not enjoying ourselves, they can clearly see it on your face. And you started, you mean to go on. So we're trying to bring people out of the shell. We had a really good break. I won't drop names in case it embarrasses anyone, but we had a really good breakthrough with one of the lads just joined the promo class, yes, which I've already said I've been buzzing off. And that's what we're trying to do. We have to bring them out of their shell. Mm. And then you just give them multiple opportunities. If we played Quidditch every single week and this kid is still not smiling, Quidditch's not going to do it. So we don't do that every week. We actually only did it once, but it was really fun. We play dodgeball and we do crab football and we just do all sorts of heads and balls, all these stupid things just for team building, yeah, and to just get people to talk to each other.
But team building's an important thing. Like, the thing I'm proud of at progress shows is, and again, it might just be me seeing it from my point of view as a promoter, but I always feel that I can walk into our locker room and go, I like everyone here. And I feel that everyone here kind of likes everyone else. There's probably going to be exceptions here and there, but it feels like, I got asked to do an interview for a website a little while ago, and this guy sent me this interview, and I do all the press stuff for progress, so he sent me this interview. And it was all these questions, and they were all like, have you ever had to break up a fight backstage? You know, do you ever see people doing drugs backstage? And so I'm like, I gave him the most boring answers. I was just like, no, I really like everyone who works for us. No one's ever fallen out. Like, if people have got an opinion about what we ask them to do, they'll come to us and discuss it, and it's normally very civil. And he ended up not publishing the article because I've given him such boring answers. But they were the truth. Like, people want the dirt, and they want... Yeah. They want to think that there's this big rivalry and stuff like this. If a training session here was a Hollywood film, it would be like Karate Kid, with like one lad just overcoming all odds. Whereas what wrestling is, it's people helping people to make entertainment.
I actually say this all the time. It's the ultimate team sport. It's actually the only true team sport. Because if you watch football, which is considered a team sport, that's 11 versus 11, where 11 win and 11 lose.
Yeah.
Whereas in wrestling, we all work together to win.
That's a great point, mate.
Yeah, I say this to them all the time. One of the good things that I like about this as well is that I can actually still, like I said before, make money. But I can still make money when I'm injured or,
yeah,
you know, just midweek. Sometimes when the shows are a little bit down, this is something else to do with wrestling. So this school in itself has made my life better, where I can do the thing that I love,
yeah,
even during the week, even without the summer, without the midweek shows. I can do the thing that I love. I share it with one of my oldest mates in this job. If ever I can't do it, because I do have one of the midweek jobs, he'll do it for me,
yeah,
or vice versa. And particularly now it's relevant because I am actually, I wouldn't necessarily say it's a massive injury, but I tore a little bit of my pec, and so I can still come down here, have a laugh with the lads. They make my life happier. They see that I'm enjoying it.
Yeah.
They feed off that.
Was it always your intention to end up like training? Because I know that when you first did, you were one of the first people I sort of did a sort of sit-down interview with. Was it always the intention to sort of do this? So when I first chatted to you, was this in the back of your head to do?
It was never an intention, yet I always seemed to be doing it. Like, when I was in school and people used to ask me, what are you going to do? I kind of wanted to be a teacher.
Yeah.
I just kind of liked it. And then when I was in school, I was actually, not to blow my own trumpet, but I won like an award for being the best at maths. in Merseyside in year nine.
You and Keith Lee are the two maths geniuses, because he's a maths genius
so
as well.
So they used to like help, I used to help out other lads in class to do that, and I was just always going that way. And then there's a direct correlation between my grades and wrestling. When I decided I want to be a wrestler, just something happened. I don't know what it was. I actually handed in one of my, when I went to uni, I have a degree in accounting and finance, as Jim Ross announced on ITV. I don't know why he did that.
What's your favourite formula in Excel?
Equals count.
VLOOKUP.
I like equals count. I just
concatenate's quite good as well. I can only do maths in Excel, guys. That's actually me doing stand-up material, because whenever I ask someone in the audience what they do, I go, what do you do? And they say accountant. I always go, what's your favourite formula in Excel? And it always gets a laugh from four people and no one else. And it's perfectly acceptable. It's, I think some people like, do enjoy teaching. It's weird because I was a teacher, so like it's not unusual for me, it doesn't feel unusual for me to come and do promo training, for example, or when I started doing stand-up, it doesn't feel unusual for me to teach people how to write and perform stand-up. That feels normal. But when I was a kid, I wasn't like that. It was something that, I'll be honest, I became a teacher because I was like, oh shit, it's 26 grand a year to not work the summer. I'll be honest. And there'll be teachers listening to this going, that's exactly.
That is
that's
why.
One of so many teachers in wrestling. Like, that is 100% why there's so many teachers in it. You and JD are both so sort of, you seem so comfortable with it. And I suppose part of that comes when you've trained to be a wrestler, you've been, like you say, you've been around people who are good trainers and you've been around people who are not good trainers. So presumably, you know, in 20 years' time, people who are training wrestling in 20 years' time are going to be fucking amazing based on this logic.
Definitely, because I said, like, some of our lads have only been doing it for 4 months and they're putting on these matches that are very modern. And, Joe, don't get me wrong, they might not be able to necessarily main event the shows right now, but after 4 months, to walk straight on at the bottom of a card and no one know the difference between you and the guys a little bit higher up, it's just unreal how quickly some of them have progressed.
And you guys are putting, so you're putting shows on in here as well, aren't
you? Yeah, we've done one so far, and it was like well better than we ever could have expected, really. Yeah. Obviously, the venue's already set up for us. We literally rip all these mats up, pull the ring into the middle, get new lights in here, PA system that we borrow, and the whole place gets transformed. But at the same time, it has that kind of grungy underground feel to it, because we are in a hollowed out swimming pool. Like, is there anything? I know you guys are punk rock wrestling, but that's pretty fucking punk rock.
I mean, to be fair, mate, we did that show in New York where it was as wet as a swimming pool by the end of it.
I was trying to watch through the curtain and the ceiling was crying on me because it was too hot.
You were lucky, mate. You were out there at the beginning.
If you actually, I watched it back when you put it on demand, and I was just laughing my head off. Just, I remember Jack, because Jack always rips me for being blown up at every opportunity anyway. But he was like mocking me before we even went out, because he knew how bad I was going to be. Yeah. And I'd finished my promo and it looked like I'd got out of the shower in my t-shirt. It was piss wet through.
I was going to ask if you were nervous for that, because I was a bit fed up this afternoon. So I'd just watch the beginning of that show again, because I know it's probably one of the coolest things I'm ever going to experience. Because having like Gabe, who used to work for ECW, come up to me at the end of the show and go, that was like ECW used to be. I was like, ooh, that's a bit good. He was like, that's what it used to be like when Paul Heyman would go out and do his speech at the start of a show. And I was like, I'm sure he knew it was a cool thing to say to me, but at the same time, like, it blew my mind. But the beginning of that show was so hot and so mental in there that I found it difficult going out from the curtain and even saying hi to the fans like I would in Camden or Manchester. And I found it really weird. And then I was so nervous because it's a new country and I wasn't expecting it. And then luckily they were so loud, I didn't really have to say anything. But I don't know how nervous, because at the start of the show, it was like, because we had to adjust things for injuries, we made the start of a show like a Monday Night Raw. it was the promo start of the show. And I know that, like, you and Jack have, felt really cool being able to put, it sucked that we couldn't do Jack and Pete, but it felt really cool that we could put you and Jack together, because I know that most people are aware that you guys are really good friends. Both you guys are good friends of mine, so I trust you both to be in there at the start of the show. So the match wise, I wasn't worried about, but like, how nervous were you guys all about the promo?
Do you know what though? Because I get to start with a promo,
so
I'm in my element. I'm absolutely fine with that. I'm in front of a new crowd in America. That was a little bit. When I was in the multi-man, I was more worried.
Yeah,
because I was thinking, how am I going to stand out. And I don't want to just be okay.
Yeah.
I want to stand out. Yeah. I want everyone to remember me from the match. The second it got swapped to Jack again, I was like, oh, well, this is easy. Yeah. Like, we're going to have a brilliant match. I know that for a fact. There's no other way. The thing that I was nervous about is how hot it was and how bad my cardio can be. I don't really have, I say this a lot, I don't really have cardio. I don't really have any base level of cardio. My cardio is the crowd.
Yeah.
So if I hit a big move and you pop, I'll get back up and keep on going.
Yeah.
If I hit a big move and you don't, I may never get up again.
So this is a weird thing in that there's a thing in comedy called Dr. Showbiz, which is I could have, so I've done stand-up with pneumonia, right? And I've been like dead backstage. They've had to pick me up. They've announced my name and I've gone out on stage and people have left and I felt invincible for 20 minutes and they go backstage and die again. And I've seen wrestlers do that. I've seen wrestlers like, remember Paul Robinson being really sick backstage at the first show. Yeah, at the first show we did at the ballroom and he wrestled Tommy. And he was like, the brink of, it turns out afterwards we found out on the brink of death he was that ill. But you know, it was like, oh, lights are on, music's on. It must have happened.
Most drunk I've ever been was off playing spirit pong with my mates, and it was so
not pathetic. Even beer pong.
It was
pong.
So pathetic though. It wasn't cool. Like, we went to a house party. It was my mate's house party, so like we showed up early so that it wouldn't be dead when other people show up. So no other guests had even arrived yet. The beer hadn't even arrived yet, but he had this new little kit, so we wanted to play. So the beer wasn't even there yet, so we played it with spirits instead. And because I'm a dab hand at ping pong, I won my first game, but only just.
Yeah.
So I still drank 5 cups of this stuff, and then I lost the second game. So I had like 9 cups, which were like half full with just straight vodka and Cointreau and all this other stuff. And then I just sort of passed out before any other guests even arrived to this party. So then the next day, I just didn't know what planet I was on. I was an absolute mess. And I had NGW in Hull when me and Sam Bailey were the tag champs, I think. We were at least up there anyway.
Yeah.
And it was me and Sam Bailey against Ligero and Dara Diablo in the main event of an over-18 show in a nightclub in a tag table match. I threw up about 8 times on the hard shoulder.
Oh,
I couldn't eat. I was the most drunk I've ever been. It was a terrible. It almost put me off drinking. But it, like, when we got there, I was just a mess. I was just white. I couldn't eat anything at all. And then when we were in a nightclub, so when we first, I was like, where are we wrestling again, guys? We walked in. And there's just Jaeger bomb on the floor, and the smell knocked me sick, and I had to run upstairs and puke. And then we went out and did 35 minutes of tag table stuff. Big power bombs off the top rope through table. A really good match. We brawled all around the venue. It was amazing. I just remember, like, I went through the table last. Went through the table, huge pop, match is over. And I was lying on there on the floor, and me and Sam were having a little word where no one could see, just laughing about how we actually got through it, because he didn't think I was even going to make it out the curtain, let alone through 35 minutes. And then some girl from the side leant over and went, "You're shit," and swilled me with a drink. And I had to run backstage and throw up again.
I think it is amazing. Like, I've seen guys, like again, it's been hangover-based quite a lot of the time. People just like, and people will, I think as well, people behave differently around me because everyone knows I don't drink. So I think you'll see people go, no, I'm not hungover. I'm like, guys, like, I know I've not had a drink for 20 years, but I've definitely had a few drinks in my time. You are definitely hungover. It's fine. As long as you're not still drunk, that's my concern.
I can smell old JD and vomit.
No, if you're still drunk, that's a concern, because you're putting your opponent's life in your hands. But if you're hungover, it's fine. Just maybe, you know, maybe have something to eat and sober up before you go out there. You mentioned before, you are injured at the minute. Slightly.
Just slightly. Like, I don't want to play. Plus, I pride myself on not being injured quite a lot. So this was really unfortunate. The worst bit is I was on offense. It was a tombstone lung blower. And it was just a slight slip. It was on Lionheart. He's not a small lad.
Yeah.
His knee, it wasn't his fault at all. His knee came down just underneath my collarbone. And it was an actual impact, which caused a minor tear, which is unusual for tears as well. It's just because a friend of ours, Joey Hayes, was out for a long time with a full tear, which started as a minor tear. I got told to rest it because I've been like religiously rehabbing it. I think I'm ready to go again.
Yeah,
which put me out for 2 weeks, which is fine. But that, and again, I will be protecting myself in what I need to do. It's going to be taped up and everything to look after it. But
see, I have this all the time in that I think, I don't know if other promoters are like this, but the minute I hear that someone's hurt, I mean, I messaged you.
Yeah.
I was like, you all right? And part of it is, does this affect our booking?
Yeah.
I'll be honest. But the other part of it is, again, I pride myself on everyone who works for us is my friend, and I don't want anyone to miss out on earning money. So, you know, like I'm always the... When Lycos got hurt, I was one of the first people to message him and go, you all right? And I hate the idea of anyone getting hurt because I hate the idea of anyone missing out on this great hot period that we've got at the minute.
Well, I talked to the promoters. I was meant to be working for ICW and RevPro at that weekend. Mm. And so I really didn't want to pull out. I hate pulling out.
Yeah.
But I messaged them and sort of spoke to them and said, this is what's happened. Mm. What should we do?
Yeah.
Because then they would be guilted to tell me to pull out.
But, I mean, at least you're telling people you're hurt because the flip side of that in wrestling is the amount of people who don't tell you that you're hurt.
I mean, to be normally that's me. but it was more Yestin Reese than anyone else. Hmm. So Yestin obviously is a physio and he just put the shit right up me when he was telling me about it. And so, and plus he didn't have to examine me. I showed him a picture. He said, that bruising is a tear.
Yeah, because you sent me the picture of it and it was like... I don't look good.
It's really gone down because he also told me how to treat it. So I've had cold and hot therapy every day, religiously, in between Zelda.
This is the thing, is there's quite often, there's people who, I think that in wrestling, there's different categories of people. There are people who, I don't want anyone to get hurt, but it happens. And there's people who get hurt and religiously rehab, like yourself. I know when Will Ospreay's got hurt, he does similar things. And then there's people who rehab a little bit, but rehab's hard. Rehab's harder than wrestling. And then there's people who just go, it'll be fine. And I think it's... And not everyone's the same, and it doesn't mean anyone who chooses not to rehab's any worse than anyone else, but it's... It's the rehabbing thing is hard. Like I've had knee injuries. I had a knee injury from when I was marathon training. I got given stuff to do, and I was forgetting to do it every day. And because it wasn't affecting me, because I wasn't planning on running any other marathons as soon as I did my knee. But I know that. I mean, like you say, it's not easy rehabbing an injury. And even if you've only got to rehab it for a couple of weeks, it's a lot of effort, isn't it?
Well, I'll be resting before I'm going to the gym again.
Yeah,
which kills me. I love training chest. If you could be like a bodybuilder of just training chest, I would be the biggest fucking guy in the world. of all the muscles to tear, I tore my pec.
It's what do you avoid doing at the gym the most if you can?
To be honest, it would probably be deadlifts. I'm really unflexible.
Right.
And traditional deadlifts, because I'm 6'4". Well, I'm 6'3", actually. That's a lie. I'm 6'3". I'm legit 6'3".
So though. WWE, 6'6".
So, yeah, I'm 7'3". I'm 6'3", actually flat-footed.
Yeah.
But I'm all leg as well. So I've got long legs on top of that. So, like, traditional deadlift just doesn't work for me, so I have to do sumo deadlift. And then I found out some techniques that were pushing the sumo deadlifts. And then sure enough, in the midst of like a load of shows, I tried to beat my one rep on sumo deadlift and I sort of pushed my knee out a little bit. Yeah. So I'd say deadlifts is just the one because it's so awkward for me. Generally speaking, I don't mind the gym.
Well, you clearly don't mind it. If you go back and watch chapter one and the difference in what you look like at chapter one to now. And I always find this fascinating with anyone who's had a wrestling career for longer than a few years, everyone looks vastly different. Look at what most of your favourite indie stars look like when they first started, or most of your favourite stars in WWE when they're on the indies, what they look like and the difference. I remember once someone sending me a video of the late Chris Travis wrestling, I want to say Martin Stone somewhere, when Chris must have been early 20s, and he was tiny.
Yeah.
Like he was a stick. And I was like, and then, you know, before he got sick, obviously he was very much a body lad and looked amazing. I remember thinking, oh yeah, that shit doesn't happen overnight. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like the difference in guys like you, the difference in guys like Ligero and everyone like that from 5.5 years ago when we started. And it's down to dedication.
It's consistency, Get in. I just treat it like I get there. Once you're there, you're there, so you might as well train while you're here.
Do you know what? That's the best bit of advice anyone ever gave me about going to the gym, because I'd never been to the gym until I ran a wrestling company. And then it was wrestlers going, Tommy End in particular, going, why don't you go to the gym? I was like, why? And he went, well, you're a fairly decent-sized lad. Why don't you just go to the gym? You'll be in shape. And I was like, and he was right. I got in shape. And I lost loads of weight. Brilliant. Cheers. And I listened because wrestlers taught me how to eat better and everything. And I was like, oh, This is brilliant.
That's a good thing for me as well. I'm not a big foodie. I actually hate eating, to be honest. I get so bored of eating. I'd rather be doing other stuff. So
like playing Zelda.
Exactly. Eating. I'd rather be cooking meals on a virtual game.
This is the amazing thing. You've just told me this. Because most people who listen to this know how much of a video games nerd I am. Whereas you're not.
No, you've just bought
a Nintendo Switch. And are completely addicted to Zelda.
It's all new to me. I don't know what's going on.
You have no concept of Zelda until now, which is mental. How far in are you in Zelda?
I've just finished it.
You've just finished it?
But like...
Oh, mate, you nailed it.
I'm injured. I can't train. Yeah, I've finished a lot of it in these last 2 weeks because I can't train. I can't go to the gym. So I just sit there eating every 2 hours and playing on Zelda. And ignoring my girlfriend.
I imagine that the eating thing, when you're trying to get a bit bigger and stuff like that, having seen, I think the first memory of this is watching Ligero just eating the same, realising every time I saw him eating, he was eating the same stuff. And I'm a vegetarian, so I'm like, I'm not, my diet's not amazingly sort of interesting, it's not, but I've still got some variety in it, whereas I'm fairly sure you probably, every 2 hours, you've got to eat boring.
But that's the thing, because I'm not a big food fan anyway. I'll enjoy it. If I'm going out for a specific meal and we're getting a curry and it's on a night out, I will probably enjoy that.
Yeah.
But generally, I'm not that fussed anyway. It's almost like a chore to go and eat. Yeah. So the trick for it, what I was told, and again, it's just really good advice for anyone that is interested, is just eat before you're hungry. Because when have you ever been starving? Sat at home thinking, I am so hungry. Do you know what I want to eat? Yeah. Tuna straight from the tin.
Yeah.
Get in. No one thinks that. You'll just go and get a big bar of Galaxy or something and just stick that in your face. But if you eat before you're hungry, you fill up before you get hungry. You know what I'm trying to say, don't you?
It's good.
It always prevents you from being hungry and then
you're
like never.
A life coach.
I do coach.
But you do?
Just to get back to that injury, like I said. I don't want to say I'm injured. I'm not injured. I'm just a little bit beat up and have to take some time. So Andy Quilden, Rev Pro, who runs a very like pro wrestling show, very top match orientated, and obviously it's a hell of a show to be
absolutely.
Part of.
Yeah.
I was meant to be wrestling Timothy Thatcher. There was just no way around it. Like, me and Tim have wrestled before. It's really physical. There's just nothing I could do. And so he rightfully so just said, like, you know, it's a long way away from you as well. The show's in Portsmouth. Do you want to just... leave this one? I said, yeah, that's fine.
But that's the sign of a good promoter as well, because Andy's a good promoter. And a sign of a good promoter is someone going, you know what, have this off. Yeah. Like, you'll see me doing it. Like, if someone's, I've already said to you, you know, if you can't work one of our shows, you just tell me, and we'll work around it.
Yeah.
And that's how I'll talk to everyone who's injured. If someone gets injured, I'm not going to go, oh, for fuck's sake, you've ruined our plans. I'm going to go, no, get better. Don't rush back.
And don't ruin our future plans.
Like you can move stuff a couple of shows.
Yeah.
You can't, you know, likewise, if all of a sudden people's travel plans change or whatever, I can move stuff a couple of shows. I can't change an entire year's plan if you're out for a whole year.
So ICW on the warpath to fucking the Hydro, Mark Dallas just said, well, you can still hype up our shows by coming and talking. Job's still there if you want it. I'm never going to turn one down like that. Especially when it works, though. You know,
yeah,
if Andy would have said, do you want to come up and do a promo? I would have said, I don't know if that's going to work on you, if that's going to help your show in any way. Whereas with ICW, it definitely would. So I still went up. We did the show in Sheffield, and then we did a show the next day in Bristol. And it was just promos both nights. But the Sheffield was on the Saturday. So that was the hangover of Hurricane Brian. We had our training here in the morning, and I got picked up straight from here by lad Gareth and Tony Knox, who has photographed every other wrestling show under the sun, and some that you'll have never heard about. Us three were told to jump in together, so they came to pick us up. I took one look outside, there's just sheets of rain coming down. And I had already said, I might get in the back seat, lads, because I'm injured, and, you know, I wanted to sleep.
Yeah.
And play Zelda.
Sleep on a wrestling road trip. You're not allowed to do this.
I'll be honest, it was Zelda. And then I saw his little Corsa, and I thought, actually, Tony, get in the back. I'll have the front. It was a nightmare. We're coming in sheets. So we left on time.
And Sheffield as well. You're gonna go down Snake Pass and
Snake Pass, yeah. And to get to O2 Academy in Sheffield. Yeah. So we're heading to the O2 Academy. Rain. We had the car broke down within half an hour. We had to just get out and just fix a few little bits, and then luckily it started up again. Then we got stuck in traffic. Then he had to, because his car, like, we were basically Flintstone in our way there. So like that slowed us down.
Chicago, mate. Chicago.
We had to slow down a little bit because of that. Then we get stuck in traffic again. I think we missed one of our turns, which put us out. So even though we left with plenty of time, with Brian against us and with all this other stuff, we arrived at Sheffield sort of 15, 20 minutes late. And my segment was on third. Tony should have been taking pictures from the start. Yeah. So we're late. And we pulled into the car park and then we came out. And again, it was pissing it down. So we were just running through all these sheets of rain. Ran up to the venue and the security was outside. I've got my suitcase and I was like, all right, mate, we're here for the show, but I'm late. I just need to get in now. He's like, oh, mate, I can't let you in at the minute. You know, I need to get a pass off you. I've got a suitcase full of wrestling boots here and spandex. Like, this is a hell of a play if I'm trying to sneak into this show. Tony has just got cameras and everything in the rain. We're like, we're obviously a part of the show. And he's like, guys, you know, I'm just doing my job. I can't let you in. And I basically just had enough, right? It was raining. I was getting a bit cranky. And I more or less just pushed past them. We just re-diverted over to the right. We could see this big metal fence that had been set up. And we just pulled it out the way. I say we. Tony Knox didn't do anything wrong. I was like, get in, lads. We're going. So we walked in and then we see a load of people stood outside smoking. But I was looking at them thinking, I thought that was the back entrance. Because I've not got my gigs on. Like, I never wear my glasses anyway, so... I can see okay, it's not terrible, but like when I got there I was like, oh, you're not who I thought you were. And I went, where's the back entrance, guys, which way is it? Another security guard, oh, you're here for the show? I said, yeah, I'm on the show, can you show me to the back? He went, yeah, it's this way. Pushed us into the hall and we were at a concert. So I just burst in. But it was like, it wasn't, you know, they weren't setting up the concert, we weren't like mid interval or anything like that. It was so surreal, like a bad American movie. Like, we walked in and they were mid-set playing. It was Real Big Fish. So Real Big Fish were playing and we walked in and I was kind of like, is that Real Big Fish? This is weird, like, what's going on? So then I went up to the barmaid, I started kicking off her hair again just because I've got me back up because we're late. I was like, what is going on? Where's the wrestling? She was going like, oh, I don't know what you mean. That's Real Big Fish. I said, no, I know who they are. I want to know where the wrestling is. I'm assuming there's another room in the academy. She was going, oh, I don't know. I was like, well, there's only one fucking wrestling show. Just point me in the direction of the wrestling show. And she's like, oh, I don't know. Maybe I can't hear you. I was like, oh, fuck you. You're useless. Went up to another security guard. I was like, mate, ICW, wrestling. I've got my boots. I don't need a pass. Go and ask Duncan or Robin or anyone. I'm here for the wrestling. Where am I going for the wrestling? And then I looked at the dead look in his face and for the first time realised, maybe I'm wrong. I was like, I just go, what are you on about? So I got my phone out and went on the ICW event page and just sank into my knees. ICW Sheffield live at the plug.
Because I did think this guy, I was talking to Chris Brooker about it because he went to the show. And I said, was it in the same, because we were at the academy?
No.
Because I thought it was at the academy. So I was like, was it in the same place that we ran? And he went, no, it's a completely different room. I was like, oh. And I couldn't get my head around it. And now you've explained it. I would have gone to the wrong place.
Because Real Big Fish booked it.
Because Real Big
who
Fish.
Who I did get to see for free, though.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
So then we had to run around in the rain and run down the street. Like, the security guard on the way out. I mean, fire that security guard. If anyone knows, guys, the O2 Sheffield.
Do you know what the best bit is?
I was just a mental, bald Scouse guy running with a bag whose only excuse was, I have spandex and boots.
But
and he let me into Real Big Fish.
Here's the worrying thing.
You're probably going to meet him again
in December for us.
Yeah, but I'll be like, mate, I've got a bag full of cymbals and drums here. Let me in.
I've got a load of sort of late 90s ska music, if you fancy it. Now, the real reason we're gathered here today in this disused swimming pool in a suburb of Liverpool is because sometimes people appear on the podcast and then people want to hear, we didn't get to talk about as much stuff as people wanted to hear. Bearing in mind, we're already 34 minutes into this.
Oh, I feel like there's going to be a lot of listeners 20 minutes in going like, I don't give a shit about tuna.
The subtitle of this podcast is now, I don't give a shit about tuna. So the last time we had a chat in your front room was, we ended up talking about China and it became, in the early formative years of this podcast, there were three interviews that everyone talks about. There's the William Regal one, there's the Trent Seven one, and there's your one. They're the three that everyone talks about. And everyone, and at the end of that, you kind of went, we've barely even spoke about going to China. So there's loads more I can tell you about going to China. And then people every month would go, when are you getting Zach Gibson back on to talk about China? Well, the answer is now. And what we've realised is, I've mentioned this before, Zach's probably going to be on every 6 months. We're just going to have a catch-up of all the shit that's happened to him in those previous 6 months and anything else he's remembered from going to China. Okay, that's what we're going to do. We're just going to have him on a rotating, like, every 6 months. We'll probably get him on a round table from time to time as well. And just every 6 months, just get him on.
That's Sky will pick it up in a few years and animate it.
So, the last time we talked about the first time you went to China. Now, the first time you went to China, you went on your own, which I think the thing was mind-blowing for me at the time, was how the fuck... How old were you when you went to China as well? First time.
21?
To go to China on your own at 21.
I don't know, actually. I really don't know.
I went to Belgium this week, and I rang my dad on the morning of me coming home, and he went, what are you doing? I went, well, I've stayed at the promoter's house. I'm just walking from the promoter's house to the metro, and then I'm just going to get a metro ticket, get on the metro, get back to the train station. He's like, well, the sign's in English. I'm like, no, they're all in French, mate, and Dutch. He's like, well, how do you do that? And I'm like, well, I'm a 39-year-old man. I should be. And it was odd, but I found my way around. But me at 39, I'm used now to going to different countries and looking after myself. Me at 21, absolutely fucking not. So, like, being there at 21, I think, is nuts enough on your own. But that wasn't, of course, we only discussed the first time you went.
Do you know what? It might have been a bit older than 21. But I was in my 20s. Yeah. The point of that trip was, like, I just needed to be doing this stuff. I didn't want to plateau. I got offered the chance to go to China for 2 months. I was supposed to be going with Sam Gradwell until he pulled out last minute because he didn't want to lose his job at the time. He regrets that every day, he says, all the time, because he loves China just as much as I do. But I went there by myself. Just because I just survived somehow. I don't really know how. I pretty much fell. I think I said this last time. Pretty much just fell throughout the whole trip. But I went there, got involved in the culture a little bit, as you have to. Like, otherwise, what was I going to do? I was there by myself in rural China. So a lot of people say, oh, I've been to Beijing. I was like, you weren't there. We went to Chongqing.
Do you remember when Gazza signed for a Chinese football team? And everyone was like, oh, it'd be great because he's like Hong Kong. And people were like, no, he's signed for a very much provincial football team. The sort of place where, you know, there was a lot of pollution there. And I think the culture shock, he was there about 2 weeks. And he just went, fuck this, I'm coming home. So how long after trip one did you get asked back for trip two?
Well, this is the thing. Like, I wanted to go straight back. So the first trip, I made loads of Chinese friends. Just really got involved in the whole place over there. Fully got into there. Really didn't want to come home. Just had a really good time. And then I got quite pally with the boss. He was like a bit of a strange guy, but because I'd already heard stories, I just loved him anyway. we call him Drunken Boss. I think I've mentioned this before. Yes. But that's because that's what the lads from Hong Kong call him in their sort of broken English. They just call him Drunken Boss, and we just didn't see any need to think of a better nickname. Because he is. They have this super, super strong, they call it wine. It's not, it's absinthe. And it's not wine if you have to have it through like a pipette to survive, because they would have to have a drop of it at a time, blows your head off, and he'd drink a bottle, and he'd just be out of his mind because he weighs about 4 stone. He'd be out of his mind every night, and then the next day he'd be fine, and then he'd just drink another one. So I made friends with him, and he was saying, I mean, the main fault with the first tour, which is why I went for 2 months, but I really didn't get to wrestle half as regularly as you'd think. Is because there was just me and a couple of Chinese guys who weren't really ready to be on shows.
Sure.
One Chinese guy who I still kind of rate, called Gao Yan, I liked him, he looked after me. Me and him had some good little matches. So he said to me, we're going to organise a new tour and you're going to help me bring over the lads. So I just thought, you have no fucking idea. You have just asked. But I also said, I was there nodding away. Yeah. Sensible. It's sensible. As well, I think like 8 was their lucky number.
Yeah.
In China, it's like a really big thing. And I'm born on the 8th of August.
So oh, wow.
The 8th. Which is why at a time when I was over there for a month, I thought, you know what? I've got loads of friends over here. Mm. I'm the 8th of the 8th. I'm like some god. Maybe I am Chinese. I just didn't know. So then I didn't hear anything. He just went completely cold.
Right.
Didn't hear anything. And then a couple of months later, I get the call again from him. But it's just all moving so quickly, as they do over there. He just goes, I want to run a wrestling show when? 2 weeks. Get me a team. And because of how good I had put it over to a load of people, luckily enough people were ready to jump on it. Mm. So he'd already had Sam over for the first tour, so Gradwell was back in and wanted to actually go this time.
Yeah.
I was back in. He asked me to help organise the talent. And Ho Ho Lun from WWE Cruiserweight Classic, he was one of the other guys helping organise it. So he organised some guys from Hong Kong. I organised some guys from England. I think we both got Pete Dunne. I don't know. I was like, he went, oh, I've got this guy, Pete Dunne. I was like, yes, I know Pete Dunne.
I am familiar with his work.
He's one of ours. And we all went. A couple of people pulled out last minute, which was probably for the best. JD has kicked himself ever since because he didn't come because he had some like teaching thing at the time. And it was like, it was going to be his fallback.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? And then he did it. And then realised he didn't need a fallback, and now he hates himself because he missed out on maybe the most fun wrestling trip ever. And we all went, as like I say, you know, first time I went to China, I was there for 2 months, made a load of Chinese friends, got immersed in the culture, made a load of money, came home.
Yeah.
Second time I went there, big group of lads, did not get immersed in the culture, did not make any friends. And we had to leave the country after a month.
How long
without
you
been 2 months. We got more or less. I mean, like, if we would have stayed for another day, we would have been illegal immigrants.
I don't know if it's you told me this. It may have been Pete who told me this story. This whole... Explain the illegal immigrant thing.
Cause... Well, just generally, I mean, I just want to sort of say before we go in, there's still a lot of stories that I can't tell until... Until
statues
the sort of like
limitations.
The end of career tell all, which I'll do, where I will bury everyone.
You do realise the first thing we're going to get after this is people are going to be tweeting us going, tell enjoy all, the tell podcast, all. But tell us, fucking tell us.
Basically, when you go over there, you get a visa for a month.
Yeah.
And obviously, if you want to stay for another month, you have to go and get it renewed. So you have to go to the police station to get it renewed, which was one of the most terrifying parts of the first trip that I did. Mm. Because they took, I think the first time I went as well, though, I don't know, because I literally don't know what my visa was. I have no idea how official it was.
Yeah.
I have no idea, like, if the guy just drew a caricature of me and that just passed. I particularly going through the border anyway, he said, this isn't you. I was like, no, it is. He went, okay.
Oh, good. Good check. Yeah. Is this you?
Yeah.
All right. Then you're cool.
So, like, you're meant to stay for a month, go to the police station. They renew it as long as they can see that you can still be supported and whatever. Mm. And they give you the second month. That's how it works. This time round, we went for the month. The boss forgot to renew.
Nice.
But you had, like... So he sent us sort of, like, a couple of days before we had to leave the country. And then we weren't allowed to renew. So then we were supposed to go back to Hong Kong, renew there, come back, but we'll get to that.
I forget, it may have been you or it may have been someone else who told me that. It might have been Sam Gavala told me that story. But we'll come back to that. So, presumably, hopes were high that you were all going to make a ton of money and have a lovely time
the
on
thing
day
is,
one.
When I say a ton of money as well, it's not ridiculous money. But
back then,
I remember on paper as well, though. On paper, it doesn't look good.
Yeah.
Which is why, I mean, generally, I did just invite a load of my friends anyway.
Yeah. Which is exactly, I know when people have said to me, oh, can you maybe organise like comedy for a music festival? It's 3 days. And I'm like, who are my friends I can film this up with?
But generally, like, the boss had asked me for a couple of specific things. So he had said, like, I want a body guy. I want a flyer. Yeah. I want a blonde girl. I want a brunette girl. This is just him, by the way. This is me. He asked for these things. I filled the quota with people who I liked.
Yeah.
So we all just agreed to go out there. We had to travel through to... I said a couple of people pulled out, but it was just for the best.
Yeah.
You have to go to Hong Kong because they sort the visa in Hong Kong. Again, I don't know how official that is. I don't know how right of me it is to say this on record. But we basically... Oh, God, I just don't know what I'm allowed to say.
I think you're probably all right.
The first night we got there, we decided to have a few drinks to celebrate successfully landing in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
But obviously, a couple of lads aren't really drinkers, and they just sort of called it a night nice and early to get up, because we had to get up at 8 o'clock in the morning to go and get our visas done. We're only in Hong Kong for 3 days. The visas take 3 days to process.
Yeah.
Has to be done. Sam Gradwell is joking about how we don't need to do this, because he's been to China before, and he knows that we just do what we want. We make the rules. We are the almighty. We make the rules. But I was like, no, but Sam, this is one of the exceptions. You know, like we have 3 days. And I couldn't tell if he was joking. Mm. I'll also just put in here that I like to think that the story of China, particularly Sam's journey, because the day that Sam taps into his real personality is the day that he takes over wrestling.
Well, I had a conversation with him in Norwich during the 2 days of the UK tapings this year, where I like Sam, and I went from knowing Sam and knowing that guys like yourself have always got good things to say about him to hearing a bit more of his real personality, which is hilarious and brilliant. Like, I was crying with laughter at stuff he was telling me. So, you are right.
Yeah. So, like, I just feel like his journey over there is the proof that karma exists. For every action, there is just such an equal and opposite reaction. But I remember anyway, him and Juice stayed up drinking. Mm. I tapped
Juice
out.
Juice is CJ Banks.
Oh yeah, CJ Banks, yeah.
Not Juventud Guerrero, because that'd be a very different drinking story.
But CJ Banks is also like, not that, I don't know if this is something to be proud of, but he is the best drinker I've ever seen. I've just never seen someone like him. He's a machine. And so I tapped out when I started getting to that point where I thought, I might struggle to wake up tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to sleep. And we're in a hostel,
yeah,
just for 3 days. Our hotel in China is real nice. The hotel in Hong Kong's a hostel. Yeah. We don't care. We're all together. Yeah. Him and Sam stay up and just finish the rest of the bottle of JD. Juice has about an hour sleep and wakes up somehow better than me. He went to sleep drunk, obviously, had an hour's kip, and was just fresher than anyone else on the team. Absolutely fine, raring to go, springing his step. Sam, we couldn't wake up. Physically couldn't wake him up. And we were shaking him and punching him and hitting him. And to the point where after 20 minutes of trying, do we leave him? We did check his pulse as well.
And then there is that weird thing where you're trying to wake someone up where you're like, after a while of, oh, God's sake, wake up. You have that horrible panic of, oh, hang on. Are they dead? Oh, God.
And then he woke up and he wasn't hungover. He was just still drunk.
Oh,
it was just bad. He didn't know where he was. He will obviously regret this at this point. We have plenty of videos. he couldn't see. He couldn't adjust his sight. We were literally arms around the shoulders. We were trying to carry him.
And this is a good look when you're off to get a visa, isn't it?
Yeah. And we had to go to the subway, which is Hong Kong, is just as stereotypical as you'd imagine. Mm. It is absolutely packed. And there's just this big, jacked white guy falling down the stairs. And then just sort of making a show of himself. He was just drunk. We were all having fun. I'll save some there for next time. And then when we got to the actual place where we had to get it, it was just in this big multi-story place. We had to go up, get our visas done. It was just some fucking guy's bedroom. They were like, oh, visa office. I said, no, you've just wrote visa office on the window of your bedroom. This doesn't count. And we went in, and Sam Gradwell is, bless him, is fucked. He's mortal. He just doesn't know what planet he's on. He thinks he's back in Blackpool. Like, he has no idea where he is. But he's got a T-shirt on, a white T-shirt. And it's covered in sweat because it is so ridiculously hot there as well. The rest of us are wearing vests. Mm. We're all covered in sweat.
Yeah.
The only problem that this visa guy had with was that Tim Wiley's tattoos were on show. He went, oh, no, businessman, no tattoos. You're like, okay, but the vests are okay. Yeah. The absolutely mortal drunk pissed Sam Gradwell, that's fine. So he's allowed to be cross-eyed in the video, in the picture even. But Tim Wiley can't have two tribal tattoos here, so he had to borrow someone's T-shirt to get them. And obviously, I remember, like, you know, my dad telling me advice, you know, just keep your passport on you. First thing we do when we get to Hong Kong, passports, lads, here we go. Pass them to this guy in his bedroom. He doodles on them for a bit. We go off for 3 days, come back. We've got some sort of stamp in there. And again, I don't know what happened. I don't know how many imposter Jack Rays there are running around in Hong Kong right now. Either way, he got our visa sorted, and that's day one. You know, I kind of knew it was going to go this way. I feel really sorry for Becky Alexis Rose.
Mm.
now Mrs. Gallagher.
Yes.
Because she was there with us, and this was while no one else had came. So Pollyanna did end up joining us on the tour.
Yes.
It was originally meant to be Katie Lee. She couldn't make it. Polly was already over for...
And also, I think Polly's got family in Hong Kong,
hasn't
she? Hong
Kong, so she was literally already there.
Yeah.
She knew Ho-Ho. It made sense. Yeah. She came over. But Becky was just the sole girl for 3 days in Hong Kong. And just 3 days of just of lads just being let loose. It was a big lads holiday, and then Becky was there. She was gutted. She probably... I think she'll tell everyone anyway. She tells me enough. She hated us on those first few days. I had to be like peacekeeper between the two, but... No, it was fun.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
And then we got to China. So you have to go on a bus. I think I mentioned this last time quickly, actually, so I won't like dwell on it too much. But you go bus to Shenzhen, and then internal flight from Shenzhen to Chongqing, which again, like, if you want to talk about omens and everything that was going on, we were on that flight. Me and Tim Wiley are, like, record sleepers, the two of us. Tim's better than me. He's ranked number one. You can just sleep anywhere, at any time. But I think it's, like... I've now found I think it's one of my body's defense mechanisms because we were on this little rickety plane. Me and Tim went straight to sleep. And then I just woke up halfway through the flight and all the lights had gone out. It was shaking like a shitting dog. It was just rattling everywhere. The emergency lights ran up on the bottom and I think only one or two, but a couple of the things had fell down.
Oh, God.
And I saw that happening and just went straight back to sleep. My body just put me away again. And when I woke up, I was like, oh, we're on the ground. Big old stretch. Looked, and everyone was just sat, pointing perfectly straight, head perfectly straight, sat up rigid, straight back in the chairs. And I had to go to, I think it was actually like Juice who I sat next to. I had to go to him, you know. Did I dream that this plane had some turbulence? He was like, nope. No, we had turbulence. Tim Wiley didn't wake up at all. But like the actual plane itself just... fell to Chongqing. Oh, it was just terrible. But they apparently the Chinese people there, this is just every day to them. They're so used to it. It's just it's a completely different world. They just did not care. They have no fear at all. And when we got there, we like met all the guys. We went to the hotel. So we were staying in it. Basically, this just shows how mental it. We got there. We start talking to them. The boss comes up and gives us a big hug, which is so surreal and just fun and everything. We just loved being there. He took us for a big meal where, again, we just sort of ate these little scraps of chicken off little tiny bits of bone. They're like, the rest of us have got the chicken. They're happy now. The second we finished, we all went for food. He just doesn't touch the sides. But we introduced him. He introduced us to the main sponsor who was fronting this whole thing. So he took us. So it's a big hotel, and that's where we're staying. We're two to a room, but we all have a big double bed. Really nice rooms, actually. Yeah. Big double bed each, loads of room. And so we said, okay, cool. And where are we doing the shows? He's like, well, we're selling the shows to other people, but more or less every day, as long as you guys are fit, you're going to be wrestling in the lobby of the hotel.
What?
So we were like, oh, okay. Do you want to show us it? He's like, yeah, cool. So we came in. And it was a really nice hotel.
Yeah.
And it was just a lobby with a big, massive fountain with a big swan. and goldfish swimming on three different layers of the fountain. And we were saying, like, and where are we wrestling? He was like, in here. It was only small, and we kind of knew that anyway. I'd asked him, like, are we doing arenas and stuff? He had said, we're talking to them.
Yeah.
But, like, we're just putting that together. For now, this is where we're starting, though, because you're here for 2 months. This is where we're starting. And they chose to aim it towards, like, the upper class.
Yeah.
It was really weird. So rather than aiming for a load of people paying buttons, they were aiming for a few people paying high money.
Yeah, yeah.
And they didn't know what wrestling was. Like, this is rural China. They don't see many Western people.
It's a lot about how wrestling is structured in Japan as well. Yeah. It's aimed at the rich.
They don't see Western people, let alone Western people with muscles, let alone Western people with muscles throwing each other around the wrestling ring. Yeah. So he was like, that's what we're aiming for. I was like, okay, if you insist. I mean, we're getting paid anyway. This will be a laugh. So we're staying there. We're wrestling there. He was like, yeah. I was like, and do we wrestle on the fountain? He was like, no. You'll see tomorrow. I was like, okay. And what's through there? And so attached to the hotel as well was KTV, which right. I think I've mentioned before is one of the big things in China. Mm. It's just karaoke, but you don't do karaoke to a room full of drunks. You and your mates go into a little private room and you just do karaoke for each other. It's really weird. But they love it. You get like hand and foot. So straight away, first day, we were like, oh, well, this is cool. I mean, we've got like party place here, hotel there. We're going to be wrestling here. Like, we literally don't even need to leave the hotel. Yeah. We had all the restaurants that we liked eating at outside. So we're like, we will move, but we don't really need to.
It's easy.
And then they taught us piju, which is beer.
Right.
So all we had, you don't say please or thank you in Chinese. It's really awkward. I asked them what the word is. They do have a word. I can't remember it now because they said, you don't need to say that. We don't say that. I was like, no, but I'm English. Like, I have to say that.
I also need to know what sorry is.
Yeah.
If you could tell me what sorry is.
And they were like, no, we don't. They just, so you didn't have to say, oh, can I have a beer, please? We just said, beer. And that wasn't like because we couldn't speak the language. They were like, no, that's what we say. And they would just bring us free crates of beer every single night. Unlimited free crates of beer.
Oh, good God.
On the first night, we just had it. Again, we just sort of like, right, let's celebrate. Now we're at the next place. This is going to be awesome. We just went round. Every time we'd like poke our head into one of the KTV rooms, there'd be new businessmen in there. They'd see Westerners and they'd just go, oh, come in. So then they were like buying us drinks and everything. We had free drinks anyway, but it was just kind of cool. So we were just like drinking with them. And the second we got bored of one of the rooms, we'd just go and knock next door. But we were doing it like, oh, sorry, I thought you were my friend, sorry. And then just before you'd leave, you'd hear them go, no, come back. And then we'd go party with them for a bit. These like gorgeous Chinese girls dancing everywhere and all these fellas all having a laugh with us. And we were just like, this is going to be sweet. We only later found out that it was a hotel, wrestling in the lobby, KTV, and a brothel. So these girls, some of our boys were like, oh God, I feel like God amongst men. If we look back at the pictures, and this, we shouldn't really laugh about this. I know this is bad, but it's just to say how surreal this was. Yeah, like, to have what you thought was one night, and then to wake up the next day, look back at some pictures and realise that the girls more or less have like price tags on their dress.
Oh, mate.
It was nuts. It was absolutely nuts.
But also as well, is if you're not realising that you're in that situation, like it's that weird thing of everyone loves us. Everyone's paying loads of attention.
But to be fair though, everyone did love us. let's not bypass that.
It is this weird thing of you go from this is amazing to going, oh, this isn't quite how I wanted it to be.
None of the lads are like that anyway. But,
no, absolutely.
Do you know what I mean? It was just surreal to find that. Like, in the end, we'd like a couple of weeks down the line, they'd just sort of come and sit with us for a break, I think, from their clients. Because people always say that wrestlers and strippers get on. It's just, we're in the same thing, aren't we? We just, obviously, there are some differences and some similarities. But we go out there and we do our thing and people objectify us.
Yeah.
It's just part of the job, so I guess it's in
also
a lot
as well,
of ways.
I suppose as well, if you think about it from the point of view, like you say, if there's the fascination with the fact that you guys are Westerners and you're well-built and you're throwing each other around, there is an element of curiosity and fetishization of what you're doing by you being in such a different environment, which I think people don't always necessarily put two and two together with.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that for the sheer fact of like, what is going on? This is day one. This is the norm. So we'd be like, guys, you can't fucking do that. And there was no change in the mind. Yeah. Absolutely no change in the mind. Because we found out that pretty much every single business also doubles as a brothel in China. At least in the area where we were staying. And Joe, I don't want to necessarily say that was like everywhere. But in
someone listening to this in, I know, in Shanghai going, we've got legitimate offices.
But in the area where we were, particularly our strip, everything. It would be like, we sell chicken and we sell this. We sell TVs and we sell this. It was just, everything was like that. Oh, Jesus, this is how it's going to be. Came down the next day after looking at the pictures thinking like, this is a bit mad. Walked into the lobby. There was just a 72-year-old woman smashing the shit out of the fountain with a hammer. She didn't even move the goldfish. Just around the goldfish. Just smashing it. And there was like two guys who, don't get me wrong, I mean, they weren't particularly built. And they were just watching her. Like, guys, do you want to help out? Like, it's just unbelievable. We couldn't believe it. Like, me and Pete Dunne had sort of took the reins on being the responsible ones. Yeah. Obviously, we'd still, like, get involved with the lads. But then other day, like, we realised that, like, if we don't do something, I think it may just never happen. Yeah. We may never wrestle on this tour.
Yes.
So we need to take the reins at least and make sure that the ring gets set up and they do this. They were fitting lights around the top, which looked quite professional. And just battering this fucking fountain. We just couldn't believe it. We asked the guy, we're like, so you are serious? You are just going to smash this fountain out of the way? And he would, in broken English, say something. So we had to sort of use a translator on his phone. So he wrote out this message and showed us it on his phone. It just said, we make room for battle table. So we are...
Please call your autobiography that. We make room for battle table. I might have to call a progress back for that.
So we were like, okay, cool, we're gonna go and eat. And basically everyday life on this tour is wake up at about 3, something like that, because then we had missed the midday heat as well though.
Yeah.
The first time I was there, I just suffered so much in the heat. This time round, I didn't see the sun, not once. So we'd just get up at about 3, we'd go to CSC, which I spoke about before.
Yes, you
amazing
have.
restaurant. Then we'd just probably just sit there or maybe go to the gym. So we had a gym membership. You'd have to get in a taxi. It would take an hour in the taxi.
Yeah.
That would cost you buttons.
Yeah.
Whilst Sam Gradwell would dance aggressively to Hulk Hogan's theme song. Whilst the confused taxi driver does not know what's going on. And people are just walking in front of the cars. Like, if there's a 3-lane wide road, they will guarantee there'll be 5 cars at all times. Like, it's just ridiculous. Like, we could probably walk to the gym faster than drive. It was just easier still to drive. We go to the gym there, and then we just come back, go to KFC. KFC in China is legitimately better than the UK. It's really nice. Then we just go to CSC again, then KFC, and then we get 2 takeaways to take home and eat again later. Then we go to Jifang Bay, which is like the only strip of nightclubs and bars and stuff. I say strip, there was like 3.
Yeah.
We'd go there. That's where like any Westerners would sort of linger. So us and maybe 2 others, some weird guy from Amsterdam. And that's where we would go. So we sort of just left them to it. And then when we came back that night, we walked in, it was just such a sad sight. Like, the old woman's still there. She's just sort of sat there giving up smoking. The 2 fellas obviously haven't helped. Half of the fountain is gone. But there's still the huge base with, like, floating now goldfish. And we were like, oh, okay, are you just going to finish that tomorrow? And she went, nah. And basically the next day they translated for us, just, we got this far, we don't want to do any more, just put the ring over it. So then the next day's challenge was, okay, let's set up this ring that they've bought. We'd had no idea where this was coming. Ho-Ho sorted it though, so luckily it was actually a pro wrestling ring. Me and Pete Dunne took the reins, because we were like, at first everyone was sort of like, no, fuck this, we don't want to do it. Like, we just want to go and have fun. I was like, no, I get that, but like, we might not get to wrestle, and then we don't get paid.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so someone's got to do it.
Yes.
Or it just simply doesn't happen. And then it's that game of chicken where everyone sits there to see who's going to do it.
Yeah.
And then that stupid bit inside me goes, fine, I'll do it. And then Pete, obviously, me and Pete started setting it up. But in that little deliberation whilst we were doing this, some of the lads from like Hong Kong and China had already started putting it up. And it was kind of that made us go like, oh, geez, no, we need to step in, because we could see them struggling.
Yeah.
I was like, oh God, let's go and help. And I go up and like, you slot the certain gates together and you slot the certain bars together. I just couldn't believe how wrong it was. Me and Pete were like, what are you doing? Like, I know that you guys are Chinese. I know that we are English and our languages differ. But the number one is pretty universal. Like, put that next to the other number one. Put this number two. Even if you don't understand what that symbol means, just match the symbols. Yes. Why is this number one getting wedged into a number eight? What are you doing? So we took over that. We set it all up. It took us ages. We got the padding down. They give us this canvas, which was like a tablecloth. But we put that on. We're like, guys, get a new canvas. These are the ropes. Cool. These ropes are made for like a fucking 40-foot wrestling ring. These are clearly too long. So tomorrow, we're giving the guy instruction. Tomorrow, yeah. You, snip, ropes, fit. Okay, perfect. And then we went, and where are the turnbuckles? So when you have a language barrier and you have to say, where's my hat?
Yeah.
Point, hat, where's my hat? Yeah. Oh, here it is. I want a drink. Yeah. You have to do that universal symbol for drink. Turnbuckle? Anyone got a turnbuckle? So that was interesting. Like, what do you mean, battle table complete? No, we need turnbuckle. And then me and Pete had to get in, pick up the ropes to like where they should be. We looked at them and they went, yes, thumbs up. And then we let go of the ropes and let them drop. And they went, oh. We see connection. Luckily enough, Pete's brand, Defend Indie Wrestling, this symbol is the turnbuckle.
Of course, yes.
We all had merch with us, so we ran and got it. I think actually I might have already been wearing the vest, which was an oversight on my part. I basically like unzipped my hoodie and went, oh yeah, this. He went, turnbuckle. He goes, oh, okay. I was like, right, so. He went, tomorrow, you two meet us in lobby, we go and get the turnbuckle. Like, not a chance. Some of the stuff that I asked, we were just humouring at this point. We were like, guys, the show might not go on. We might have to wrestle sumo style on this ring because these guys who are calling a pro wrestling ring a battle table, who were like, we asked for chicken. They brought us these like little fucking like pork scratching things. Yeah. You ask them like, oh, where's the nearest supermarket? They just send you to the wrong place. Like, now we're asking them for a turnbuckle. How are we going to find this? So we had no aspirations whatsoever to find this at all. But me and Pete, again, we got up early. We did the responsible thing. We went and got in the taxi with this guy. We drove for about an hour in one direction before they spoke in Chinese and completely U-turned and drove back the other way. We go, oh, no. We drove off in a zigzag somewhere until they stopped at the side of the road, talked, asked to see my vest again. I was like, you're not going to find the fucking thing on a street sign.
I'm wearing a different vest.
I was like, oh, Jesus Christ. So me and Pete give up. Yeah. Absolutely give up. We were just talking amongst ourselves about, like, how can we work around this? I think we were booking the first show. I was asked to sort of put the matches together. So I was just asking his opinion. How should we do this for a new audience? Am I overthinking this? Should we just walk out and take the piss and see what happens? And then, here we are, guys. Open the door. Turnbuckle Street. I absolutely shit you not. It was the most surreal thing I have ever seen in my life. It wasn't called Turnbuckle Street, but it was a full street. At least 10 shops on either side of the road. And all they sold was turnbuckles. Nothing else.
How?
All competing with each other with the exact same stock and prices.
Had they just been waiting for you to visit?
Oh, it was so strange. It was so odd. But they had like paperclip-sized turnbuckles right up to like human-sized turnbuckle. Just every turnbuckle imaginary, every extra like hook and link you can think of, every single turnbuckle under the sun on Turnbuckle Street.
That is amazing.
Me and Pete could not believe it. Absolutely could not believe it.
It makes you think what other specialised streets there are.
We're like, this place is beautiful. To a wrestling fan. To anyone that likes wrestling. Just see, I always say this when you show up at a wrestling show and someone has truss.
Yeah.
There's just that, something about you, isn't it? If you've liked wrestling your whole life, you see truss. You just get excited and then know what it is. Show up at a building site and see truss and I'd be like, oh, fucking sick entrance way that, lads. So when we show up there and we see all these turnbuckles, we were just like, what is this place? It's magical, until some fella like kicked his dog. Oh, no, I remember where we are.
The move down.
That happens quite a lot. I only bring that up because I just love this idea of Pete just storming towards this guy. It didn't need any translation for him to know, oh, I've kicked a dog and he doesn't like that. I'm just going to run away.
Yeah, don't do any. One of Britain's premier animal lovers is Pete.
So we got our turnbuckles and we came home. And then we tried to tell this to all the lads who, again, were just like, you're lying, really, lads. I mean, we've got 20 turnbuckles.
We've got more turnbuckles than we will ever need.
We had 20 and they had plenty more stock.
If anyone wants to send any on.
God, honestly, unbelievable. So we fixed the ring. I remember as well, just like the same, you know, when we got back with all these turnbuckles, excited to tell the lads about our new find. Just to find the old woman shortening the ropes again with a whizzer. Sparks flying in her face. She didn't give a shit. She was just cracking on. So we fixed that, organised the first show, and then sure enough, it was just like smallish crowd of businessmen and their partners from the brothel. Just, that was it. That was our audience. It was nuts. And like, we came out to our music would hit and they would just sort of be like, is this the show? I don't know. We had a compere who was doing stuff. And
they've got no frame of reference.
No frame of reference. This is
so
like,
you can't expect people to react in a certain way when they've got no frame of reference. We
told all the lads, because like some of the lads from Hong Kong wanted to do a very Japanese style. They've had some 01 training there. But we took the reins and we were like, guys, you don't have to do anything.
Do a camp show.
They don't know what's what.
Yeah.
So just do anything. Like, this was fresh off the back of me breaking my finger as well, so like I still had my hand taped up, and I was just only bumping on one side, just to get away from my injury. So you know, we just had to do this show, and so we put it together. People had music. You'd walk out to your music, the fan, they would just look at you, as if it was a catwalk. They don't know what is going on. We would wrestle. Like, you'd take a bump, they would react. You'd do a submission, they wouldn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
You'd smack them in the chest, they would react. You just did not know what was going on. The best bit was, though, like, so the only Chinese wrestler on the whole show, actually Chinese, though, from rural China, Gao Yan, he wanted to be a heel, and we tried to tell him, but then at the same time, we were like, guys, does this really matter? If he wants to be a heel, let him be a heel. So we went out to the heel and thought the best way to get heat is to chant Chong Sing. So I was actually in the match with him. It was a tag match. It was me and Sam Gradwell tagging against him and I think Greg. I'm just going to call him Greg. He doesn't deserve a second name. He knows why. He's just such a tit. Greg's boss, but like he just already lived in China.
Yeah.
He had done one of the original tours because he already lived in China and had done a bit of wrestling over here as voodoo. He does those sci-fi science fiction. I don't know if you've ever seen them. He does those videos. They're pretty funny.
Yeah.
And he just already lived over there. The boss had specifically told him he could never wrestle for him again. He just showed up. And we were like, all right, Greg, do you want to wrestle with us? Yep, cool. And he just stayed with us. He literally just stayed in the room with Sam, even though he was never meant to be there. So that was the first match. It was him and Gao against us two. Gao started doing that, so me and Sam were like, well, I guess we're the villains then. We got on with that. They're chanting for him like, Chong Sing, Chong Sing, Chong Sing. He hits his big move. 1, 2, 3. They don't know what that means. They don't know that that's how the match ends. So then the music would hit, and they'd all go, okay, I give that 9 out of 10. Like, they don't know what wrestling is. They have no idea. One of my favorite things, I mean, this is like, this isn't going linear now, we're just riffing with stuff, but one of my favorite moments, and I this isn't really what it was, I just love it. Pete was wrestling this guy called Seki from Hong Kong, and they were actually having like a brilliant little match. Seki had a bit of fire about him, and he was quite basic. Because he had this fire, it just fed perfectly into Pete's stuff. And we were all watching it going like, all right, lads, this is quite good, this. And they were fighting, and it was still real simple. Like, you're talking 2 or 3 big moves, and that's it. Pete hit the bitter end. Boom! Music hit. And his lights went off. And that was it. And he said, he was, what? And all the crowd went, oh, started clapping, acknowledging him as the winner. And then the ring announcer just went like, here's your winner. After a bit of confusion anyway with him. The ring announcer then just announced him as the winner. So the only explanation for that is the guy on the music. Pete hit this finish and he just went, oh, it's over, lads. He's done.
We don't need to. He's not done.
Like on the old SmackDown 2 games where randomly you'd hit like your third last ride and it would just go KO.
Yeah.
You just bitter end, boom, music hits.
You should have that more, especially with lights out as well. Boom, no, all lights gone.
It was
finished.
Nuts. Oh, and Pete, but obviously Pete comes back and he's like, what the fuck? Are we like, mate, I don't think it could have been better. If you did the three, they weren't going to react because they don't, no matter how hard we try.
So in your month that you were there, did the matches stay just in the hotel lobby or did you,
yes.
You didn't move along?
I went to plenty of meetings and we did set up a big arena tour, not arena tour, like a big arena show and then another show which was going to be big, but it was going to be at some like construction site launch. So where they were going to build a whole new residency, right. We were going to be at the launch event, which was going to have thousands there.
It's a bit like me doing a corporate this, though, isn't it?
They were scheduled.
I'm getting like chills from it because I'd think of all the shit corporates I've done in my career.
They took me and Tim Wiley to negotiate the deal. We didn't speak. We just stood there and they just presented us. And then these businessmen who were in charge of this, like, obviously multi-million pounds residential area just would come in and just like, you know, coming in their suits and everything, like, okay, nice to meet you. Like, whoa, look at these lads. Look at this. Get a picture with these freaks. But they were scheduled for after we got kicked out of the country. So that never happened. Just quit.
There's
like,
still people sitting waiting.
Our gym that we went to, just to give like a bit of a frame, every so often you see, we'd start going, do you know what? I like it here. Like, I'd said this anyway. I'm like, do you know, guys, I actually like it here. I know we take the piss and we're having a laugh and that, but I like it here. It's actually fun. And then just when you go like, and I guess it's not that different. I mean, we go to the gym. It's a bit busier on the roads. You know, when you try, but like, we just walk to food. If you look around, like, oh no, there's a kid having a shit in a bin. Mum's like, because I think I mentioned this before. Like, the kids just wear little arseless chaps, like cowboys.
Yeah, it's a thing. It's kind.
So
yeah.
They just walk and then they'll just squat and they'll just shit on the floor. And the parents, like a little doggy bag, will just pick it up and put it in the bin. And obviously now, so like, we just saw a couple of people just thinking like, why take the shit to the bin when I could take the just like take the baby straight direct? So like when the kid would give a bit of an iggy, like it's gonna go, they just pick it up, hold it over the bin, it's just shit all over the bin. Like, oh, it's not normal, is it, lads? I want to tell. There's so much I want to say, and I'm just so aware of how late it is.
we've still got time. Like, fuck it. I have to get up in the morning anyway. I'm not gonna matter. So, the best bit is John, who works for Distraction Pieces Network, does a little, makes a little video with a bit of audio in that's like, is like the, one of the highlights of the podcast. I'm genuinely excited to see which ones he puts out for this. There's just so much ridiculousness already.
I'd like to quickly touch on Sam Gradwell and the scientific evidence that karma exists.
Yes, go for it.
Again, like, I'll just, it's a different reality, honestly. It's not like a different country. It's a different, any Rick and Morty fans, like, it's a different reality. You're stepping through a portal into a different world. But it's just so, the thing why I laugh and I always take the piss out of him is just because he's just living proof that karma exists. Yeah. Like, I'm just trying to think of some examples. So, Chinese people don't like queuing.
Yeah.
They just don't know what a queue is. They do not queue. We would go into KFC and they would just start pushing in front of us. And as a British person, you know how infuriating that
is. Yeah, absolutely.
So obviously we would have to stop them. Like, no, like, we're not doing anything wrong here, but you are not pushing in front of us. One, we could literally crush you with one hand. Like, how did you even think this was going to fly? How did you think this was going to work out? Yeah. No, get behind. We had to teach them how to queue. We would consistently walk in. And even if they were ahead of us, like every so often, we'd walk in and be like, lads, we're not having this. You turn around, what are you doing? We're going, look, no, you, stand here, you, stand here. We put them in a queue. We go, now queue, pay for your goods. And then next person comes in. And I remember there was just one of these occasions, so they were taking age, like me and Tim Wiley had figured out the system of getting the menu, pointing to the menu, they bring us a paper one, we point to it on there. Sam had trouble showing them it because he wanted something specific. Yeah. We had tried to teach him the Chinese. He murdered the Chinese language. So he's just pointing harder at this thing.
Oh, so he's doing the equivalent of what most British people do overseas, which is speaking slower and louder. Yeah.
but not even speaking, but just pointing with more vigour than before.
But like I say, because there are no rules for us, absolutely no rules over there, you can't help but sometimes get a little bit carried away. So Sam's got, he's pointing at these things and they're going like, no, I don't understand. And he was like, right, that's it. So he just vaulted the counter. And he's going, no, sir, you cannot. And he just went back and he just served himself. He just made his own food, put it all on his tray, brought it back over, filled himself up a drink, put it on his tray, put it down on the counter, vaulted back over, took his money out, put it on the counter, and went, I want this. Here's my money. And we were just laughing our heads off, obviously. Like, we're going like, Sam, you shouldn't do that, whilst also laughing our heads off. Paid for all of his goods. Yes. And so, like, I remember, like, another time we'd go in and one of the fellas would be, like, that worked in there, would just go to Sam, come on. Sam would go around, get his own food, pay. But then there was another time where there was a girl who didn't like it. So we'd go in and she'd sort of, like, see Sam and be like, so she's going to, like, stop him. She'd squat, arms out at the side of her. Like, she's going to block him. And obviously all that does is GM up. Yeah. You'd see this evil little smile come on the side of his face and be like, oh, God, here we go. And he'd run down and like gladiators, like jockey position with her, and then vault over the counter and go and get his food. And then come back, and she clearly didn't like it. But he still paid. He got his food, we left away, no one's being hurt. And then one of the days he comes in, he sees her again. She drops into like full guard position, shadow at the front of gladiators. And Sam looks at us and we're like, oh God, it's our fault again, we're G'ing him on. So then he starts running to get her. But she's got a really good block on this time. Yeah. Like he's going to struggle with this. There's other customers in the way. So he tries to change pace to just dart around the counter instead. Slips on the wet floor that he missed. Goes sliding into the corner and just whacks his knee into the corner. His injured knee, which he's hit in the past. Split his knee open. Blood everywhere. Just proof the karma exists. Every act equal and opposite. Although then he did. Seen that scene from Ace Ventura? Where he gets the arrow in the knee.
Yeah.
It was basically like a really surreal remake of that, where Sam isn't actually that hurt, but is just lying on the floor screaming. It's like, just to distract as many people who are eating the KFC as possible. We, at our gym, we used to go, they had a swimming baths as well, which was not clean, but we just really wanted to swim.
Yeah.
And like, bear in mind that in China, it's common practice, if you have a blocked throat, to just clear it and spit on the floor.
Yep. Yeah, I've had friends who've been there
at meals,
and it's not that unusual in quite a lot of countries. So.
Oh, it's rancid though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not great.
At meals, and they're just gobbing on the floor, big greenies on the floor. Oh, fucking hell, guys, can't be doing that. In the gym, mid set, on the floor, like, that's carpet. What are you doing?
It's not the Jones. It's carpet. Come on.
And we used to go swimming in there, and they tried to make us wear swimming caps. You're like, one, I am bald. And two, it's perfectly acceptable for me to snot in this fucking thing, but you want me to wear a swimming cap? And we just went, no. Outright, no. We're going swimming. Run, dive. Can't stop us now, we're in. Yeah. And they would come in every occasionally, like, guys, swimming caps. And we'd be like, so we're English, sorry. We don't understand. Whereas Sam would be like, sorry, mate, what are you trying to say? I can't understand. And bring them closer and then try to pull them into the pool. Even though we had a pass, we had this free pass by our sponsor to go to the gym, he would still insist on sneaking past security and running in because it just got him a bigger kick than show it. So if ever they did catch him and be like, what are you doing? He'd go, oh, I've got a pass. He'd still run past security. So then one day, it was me and John Schuyler from the States. Mm. Just us two in the gym. We're training chest. I've actually got a really good picture of us with this, like, 3-foot monk at this particular workout.
Sure, that's a film I've seen. That's brilliant.
So we were, like, we were just training our chest, and we're in there training. This massive crash, huge bang. We're like, what the fuck was that? And everyone else around us was looking around, which is strange, because normally they don't give a shit. Mm. And then we walked over to the swimming pool and the ceiling had just collapsed into the swimming pool.
Mate.
I have a picture of this as well. The ceiling, just, with no catalyst whatsoever, had just collapsed into the swimming pool.
Was there not like an 80-year-old woman hitting it with a hat?
Battle table.
You put battle table here.
But the best thing about it is, which I just think sums the whole place up, the ceiling has collapsed. Me and John, what the fuck is going on? And we looked in the pool, and there were just people swimming. Like, in collapse, they looked back at us, but can you believe this? Ducked under, swam around the ceiling, just swam around the debris. This one guy next to us in his little tighty whities with his swimming cap on and his goggles, who was obviously dry.
Yeah.
So he saw it and he was like, look at that. Towel on the side. went and got
in. Sure got my swimming cap on. Yeah. That's why it was for protection of the ceiling.
Hard hats, wasn't it? They were hard hats. Actually, nice segue from there. We did one of the shows, for the first like 3 or 4 shows, I was resting in tags because I just broke my finger.
Yeah.
This was actually, the tour was like weeks after the match with Zack Sabre, Strong Style,
yeah,
where I broke my finger.
Yeah.
So obviously, this is the kind of time scale. After about 4 matches of not really bumping much, I realised I don't need to protect myself in tags here. Yeah. But for the first few, we did. And the boss had said to us, like, oh, we've got a couple of these people in, and they like the bravado of wrestling and the talk, and they've actually seen wrestling before. So can you guys add some promos to the show? We're like, yeah, sure. Me and Sam are both very competent talkers. We'll do a tag promo before our match.
Yeah.
Like, perfect. So we went out to do it. And I was like, oh, so do these guys speak English? Yeah. No. He's like, okay. He's like, but they'll get the emotion.
Hmm.
So, you know, you talk, and we've got this guy here who speaks English. He will translate.
Oh, God.
I was like, okay. And is he good? Is his English good? He's like, it's okay. And so he was like, so just keep it simple, though. I was like, okay, Sam. Sam, are you okay with this? He was like, yeah, I'm fine, mate. I'm fine. I was like, would you say this a lot to me, Sam? And then you go and jump over the counter in KFC and split your knee open. Or he's like, no, it's fine, Jack, honestly, it's fine. I was like, okay. I was like, well, you take the lead, you do the little start, and then I'll take it home. He's like, okay. So Sam's got the microphone, and he goes, I am Sam Gradwell from England. And then looks to the translator, who says, like, Sam Gradwell, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And everyone goes, oh, and claps. He's like, okay, this is Zach Gibson from England. And he goes, oh, okay. And he's like, we are the best professional tag team in the world. Translates that. We have won every single tag team title in the world. Translates that. It's like, we are superior athletes, far superior to any of the Chinese race. Something along those lines. It probably wasn't that blatantly racist, but it's something along those lines. He translates that. I think then he said, you know, something along the lines of like, we have the best tag team maneuvers you've ever seen. And the guy looks back at, I don't know that word. That's enough to trigger him. So then he's like, oh, yesterday we went to the gym. And now he's just looking at us going like, I don't know. He's like, but he still pauses for him to translate. So he goes, we went to the gym and we wanted to go swimming. Looks back at the he goes, I don't know that word in English. We wanted to go swimming. And they wanted to make us wear swimming caps. He's like, sorry, Sam, I don't understand. Swimming caps, I said, for the mighty English tag team, the mighty English Dolphins. And this guy's going like, dolphin? He's like, the mighty English Dolphins, we do not wear swimming caps. We are superior tag team athletes. You should make us swimming crowns. Crowns of gold. He's just going up talking absolute shit. The crowd, I've never been more quiet or confused. Like, you're talking like these businessmen just looking at each other going, I don't understand. Like, it went on for like 20 minutes. To the point where I didn't enjoy it anymore. I was sat in the corner just feeling awkward, thinking, we have to wrestle now. We're never getting this back. Then it got funny again. Then it stopped being funny again. And then they just cut his mic. And then the two Hong Kong lads came out in silence. We just had a shit match.
Oh, God. So, how did it all... I'm aware that we've been doing this for a while and it's late. So, I know we'll still have... We'll have to do a part... We will genuinely do a part 3 at some point. How did it all end, like, with the whole... How did it come about that you were like, we should probably go home now?
Well, we didn't really get to make that decision. like I say, the visa runs out after a month.
Yeah.
So, after the first week of shows, we were like, right, time to get paid now. He was like, no, that's not how we do it. Like, we'll pay you next week. Right? Well, guy, no. I mean, we've done these jobs. We need our money now to live, to pay this stuff, because we don't want to go to our bank and get the money out. Mm. And he was like, no, you know, this is China style. This is how we do it here. You hear that a lot. That basically means this is bullshit, but we're going to cover it with China style.
Yeah. This is how things are done here, is normally you're about to get fucked.
Yeah.
I've learned.
We were like, I think the first time we gave him a passport, we were like, listen, we're not being funny here. Like, we want the money for these 2 weeks on this date, or this whole thing ends, and you've got 8 pissed off Westerners.
Yeah.
And he was like, no, it'll be fine. Get to that next show. He texted us to say, like, sorry, you don't have the money. We'll have it next week. We texted him to say, you do have the money. You will have the money, and we are not wrestling until you get it. And we are going to be sat in our locker room waiting for you. I say locker room. KTV. I used to put my boots and my knee pads on my bed, get in the lift in my gear, go and sit in the KTV, have some beers, and then go and do the show. So we were sat there, and he was like, mate, you better be there. He was like, well, I need some help. So then he shows up. He is like a frail sort of old. I say old, he's probably in his like 40s maybe. Yeah. But he shows up and he's at the door. He sees us. It's such a sad sight. Like, he was so scared and frail. And he was like, Jack. This is how he speaks, by the way. It's not like an offensive. That's how he speaks. A really soft voice. He's like, Jack, can I speak to you, please? I knew what he was trying to do. He saw me as like the sensitive one of the group. I was like, absolutely not, Paul. Get in here and explain it to the team. Come on. We'll give you another week. He's like, oh, no. He's like, what? Paul, get in here now and explain it to the team. He's like, oh, I can't. It's too cold. No, Paul, get in. So eventually he came in and he was like, oh, okay. We went, look, we're not wrestling. He's like, but the fans are coming in. We're not wrestling. So you go and get us our money. And he was like, okay. So we had to go. And I don't know where he got it from. Probably just outside, really. But he went and he got the money. He brought it to us. And he was like really pissed off with us. Like, well, now I've paid you, so this better be a good show. Like, Paul, this is the money that you owe us. You owe us this money. Next week, same thing again.
Yeah.
And we said, we're not wrestling until you do this. So then he pays us some money. But again, it was like half of what we were owed. And he was like, can I get you the rest on this time? And just because we're already there, we were sort of having a good time. We're like, okay. Then the visa thing happens. Now we're like, okay, no, we want everything that we're owed. Because he had said to us basically, like, you're meant to get your visa renewed after a month at the police station.
Yeah.
We went to the police station, couldn't get it renewed, so we have to go back to Hong Kong to get it renewed at that guy's bedroom. And then come back. And we were like, okay, but we are not coming back unless we know there's money here. Yeah. So you need to pay us for what we've done. And then on goodwill, we'll go back to Hong Kong, renew it, come back. You also need to book those flights, Paul. Yes. Otherwise, we're not going. His name's not Paul, by the way. That's what he calls himself. So Drunken Boss is saying, this is what you need to do. We go, okay. He's like, I'll give you on this date. That day comes, no pay. Mm. I'll give you tomorrow. Okay, that day comes, no pay. Mm. Paul, we're off flights. We need to get back to Hong Kong. Our visas run out on this date, and then we're illegal. Like, we shouldn't be here. Don't worry. I've got it sorted. Next day comes. Now it's like 2 days to the deadline.
Yeah.
Still no pay. Still no flights. Then it's like, I think it was 2 days before, actually. I think that's more or less how it worked. It was 2 days before we're actually illegal immigrants in rural China.
Oh, God.
With no flights, no means of booking them either. Like, just nothing. Absolutely nothing. And we tried to message him, and he just turned his phone off. Like, I mean, we can rag on him all we want, but hell of a checkmate. We had already spoke about, like, what are we going to do if he doesn't pay us?
Yeah.
And all, obviously, the bravado starts kicking in, doesn't it? You know,
yeah.
Well, if he doesn't want to pay us, we'll just go and get him and we'll pin him up against the wall and say, I'll fucking march him by the scruff of his neck to a bank machine. I'll say, you get all the money out right now. I'll go to his house, I'll do this. Turn his phone off. Oh, wow, lads. He's got us there.
Better get on a plane, guys.
So then we start going to his sponsor to bury him there. But his sponsor doesn't really give a shit. Like, his sponsor's just the sponsor. He was like, oh, I'll try and get in touch with him for you. Like, yeah, but do you understand the severity of this? We did know where his office was for his travel company.
Right.
So we went to his office and we, like, staked out there. We were like, and his staff were, like, bricking it a little bit. Mm. We weren't doing anything bad. Because, again, like, we were like, we do still want to come back for a month, though, because it's so much fun. Like, even with him fucking around, it's still so much fun. We want to come back, but we want to send a message. Like, should we beat someone up? Oh, probably not. It's a bit much, innit? All right, like, should we, like, trash his office? But if he wanted to pay us next week,
yeah.
Should we just turn everything upside down? Yeah, let's turn everything upside down. Let's turn everything in his office upside down to send a message.
Did you genuinely do that?
One of his staff was, like, playing on video games when we came in. Yeah. They're like, this is why this place is going to shit. Why are you playing on video games? He's like, I'm not. This is my break. I'm just going back to work now. And then there was just numbers on a screen. It was like a screensaver. But like, what is this fake stock market? Turn this off and pay us. Get the boss now. So we rang the boss. And then the boss answered, which was weird. But then he's talking to us like, just go back to the hotel. I'll be there tonight to pay you all and to sort your flight. Like, but you're not coming. And I was telling all the lads, everyone was a little bit hungover and tired. So everyone was like, come on, he'll be fine. I was like, no, guys, I'm really worried about this. They outvoted me. So we went back. He didn't show up. He turned his phone off again. We managed to get hold of his middleman, who we knew still had some sort of pot of money for him. So we were like, you are booking our flights home. We're not coming back. He's like, no. We were like, no. You owe us all about £600 or £700 at this point, which we are clearly not getting.
Yeah.
Like, we've already signed off on that. I didn't lose any money on that trip, but I just didn't make any money, which is a bit frustrating. But we were like, this isn't happening. You need to get us home. I do not want to live out the rest of my days in Chongqing. This is just not happening. Like, I love it for a little 2 months, but I could not live here. It's just too mental. Again, tip of the iceberg, what we've talked about. So I was like, no, you're booking it now. He's like, oh, no, well, I need to book the flight. So we had to book flights to Hong Kong. That costs, like, however, 100 for everyone. Then he had to change our flights, which were booked for another month. Yeah. He had to change them to get home. So he looked at ours. We had, like, a 24-hour layover in Hong Kong, and then we'd go home.
Yeah.
And that was, like, for me, for example, to change my flight was £600. Actually, no, I think to change my flight was, like, £650, but there was an option for, like, £450, where I had a two-day layover in Hong Kong. And he's already put his details in. And he was like, guys, this one, 2 day. And I was like, mate, I'm not having that. No, you guys are fucked up, okay? You're in this with him. You guys are fucked up. I'm not staying in Hong Kong for 2 days. He's like, oh, but guys, £200, please, you take this one. I was like, oh, okay, mate. Whoops, looks like I picked that one. Well, looks like I'm going home in a day. So we booked all of that. The boss just did a complete runner.
Yeah.
And this is why, like, any of the little bits that happened, you know, where anyone buries them or anything like that, like, you just cannot feel bad for the guy. He paid us late consistently every single week.
You can't feel bad.
He then did a runner. We all end up £600 or £700 down. So, like, straight off the bat, those hotel rooms did not look the same. We just had a wild one on the last night. The ring was in the lobby.
Yep.
That didn't look the same anymore. The canvas is all, like, shredded to bits and everything. There's a big banner outside for the wrestling, which got pulled down on the last day. There's all team photos of everyone looking all miserable, even though we were kind of having fun. And yeah, we had to leave. We wanted to stay.
Yeah.
When we got home, it was like 2 days later, the boss messaged us. He was like, oh, I'm so sorry, I was in hospital, I was really ill. I was hoping that you would be back from Hong Kong so I could pay you all. Mate, we're not. So, you know, you still owe us money. If you want to make up for this, just send the money now and we'll come over again because it was so much fun. This is the thing. Every time people go like, so you're stranded in China? Oh, my God, that's terrifying. So you'd never go back, would you? In an instant. He was like, oh, I'll pay yous. I was like, okay, well, here's our bank details. You need to pay us now. I'll have the money by next week. I'll have the money by next week. Didn't reply for a couple of weeks. Got a message from his middleman. Drunken boss has passed away.
Really?
He was like, no, he really was ill. I don't know for a fact, but I've been in China for 3 months of my life now.
Yeah.
I know enough to know that people sometimes deliberately throw themselves in front of cars to get insurance claims for their family. Like, this stuff happens over there.
Shit.
Drunken boss is not dead. He is thought to be at large at Foreigner Street, which is the world's most mental theme park, which I really wanted to talk about, but we'll save it for part three.
I love this. We're teasing the part three already. That's the dream.
He's still alive. It's absolute bullshit. He's definitely still alive. He definitely still has all of our money.
He's just on Turnbuckle Street buying all the turnbuckles.
But
the land.
Not to fit the stereotypes. Hmm. I've got his title belt. So you can go fuck yourself, Paul. by the way, just a quick little footnote. I know that would have been a hell of a finish.
Yeah.
But the title belt is worth like a fucking 50 quid, 100 yeah. quid. He owes me £700.
Yeah.
I'm on the high ground. And it's a cool belt.
Also, so you can't really take a title belt into cash converters.
It's got a dragon on it. It was basically when we were finally having this bit of just pure frustration. Our flights are booked. You still know that this is bullshit. You still owe us money. I know you're not. We're kind of taking out on his middleman a little bit. And then we sort of apologise to his middleman. Like, look, we know it's not your fault. You have helped us today. So thanks. But we're still really pissed off. I just wish there was some other way to get back at Paul. Because he's fucked us. And then we saw the two belts that we had won. And me and Pete... Not a word spoken. Not a single word spoken. Both £700 down. Just picked up these title belts, put them over our shoulders, nodded at them, just left. So next time on yeah. China Stories, what will happen at Foreigner Street?
Every 6 months.
Why is there a 6 foot tall... spinning monument of the Liberty statue? Why is that there? Why is that in the theme park? We're going to touch on that. Why did CJ Banks nearly get arrested?
I know that story.
Drunkenly and saved from Chinese police with machine guns by the bruiserweight Pete Dunne.
He's often the voice of reason.
All of this and more.
And part three. this is ridiculous. It's the most I've laughed at anything in ages, considering it's now 5-1.
Oh, God.
Right, so quickly plug the social media and stuff for the school and your stuff for yourself as well.
My social media, Instagram and Twitter, is ZachGibson01. My gym's one is different on different ones, but I'm pretty certain it's on Twitter. We are FS Wrestling UK. If you go on my own Instagram or Twitter or James Drake's Twitter, you'll just see us posting about it all the time.
And I'm going to tweet about it as well, because having been here, it's a great school. There's everyone's enthusiastic, everyone's being taught the right way, and I'm going to try and pop down as much as I can. And again, when people say to me, I live here, where should I train? This is going to be one of the places I point out to people, because I think it's a good thing. And as well, they can learn what to do and not to do in China when asked to wrestle.
And I guess the only other thing is myself and James Drake, very progress orientated, this merchandise, although it's not specifically branded. We have new merch coming out, new T-shirt, and it's just one that I'm really excited about. I think it's pretty unique to what's out there at the moment.
I'm excited because you've given me a sneak peek of it.
And loosely based on Foreigner Street, which I have realised we've not spoke about, so you also have no frame of reference again.
There's going to be people looking it up now. We're going to have to send people tweets about it. Mate, it's been a pleasure. Heal your injury up, and I'll speak to you soon. Cool. That was The Adventures in China, part two of Zach Gibson. You've heard there's probably going to be a part three. It's going to be even more ridiculous. So much ridiculousness. Just tweet me your favourite quotes. Myself at Jim Smallman, ZachGibson01 on Twitter. Just tweet us your favourite quotes from that episode, because there's some nuts stuff in there. Quick plugs on the way out. Check out everything on the Distraction Pieces Network. My website is jimsmallman.com. jimsmallman.com/TNJ to point people at this podcast and the T-shirts for the podcast. jimsmallman.com/mygirls to download my stand-up show that I recorded last year before I take it down on November the 1st. You can actually download it. I know a lot of people are streaming it. You can actually download it and keep it on your computer. So do make sure you choose the download thing and keep hold of it. And again, check the top of my Twitter feed for the show I'm doing in February in Leicester about professional wrestling, incidentally. So do check that out. And progresswrestling.com, demand-progress.com, if I haven't already plugged that. It's really late and I'm super tired. But I'm going to go edit this now and put it up so you've got it first thing on a Friday morning. Because I love you guys. That's how this works. It's a relationship based on love. Anyway, thanks for listening. Thanks again to my guest, Zach Gibson. And I'll see you next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.